Back to the chat with Satish Sarkar, author of Fitted In, The Cardiff 3 and the Lynette White Inquiry, plus The Cardiff 5, a brand new Waterside Press book available for about £16 plus from Waterside Press and on the internet, Amazon and things like that. Satish?
Yes, it is.
Just tell me quickly where you can buy both of your books.
You can get them through the Fitted In project at www.fittedin.org. Just go on there to order it and we will supply it. You can also get it through bookshops and Amazon, as you mentioned, and also the publishers.
Thank you very much. I'd like to get back to the chat about Mr. Gafoor. So now he's been in the ambulance, he's tried to commit suicide. They've got incontrovertible evidence that he is the person who did this murder. What happened next?
Well, 4 months later, he appears in court and he pleads guilty. And this is the first resolution in a vindication case through DNA in Britain. There's now 7 cases like this where there shouldn't be any doubt about the innocence of the original accused. And so we sort of carried on with this, that this became one of our major projects in the Fitted In project, that we were actually saying, well, you've got to explain how this happens. It's simply not acceptable that you can prove innocence like this and just say oops and carry on as if nothing has happened. The Lynette White case being the most important of it, because it's I shouldn't say the most important of it, it was first, so it led to things happened as a result of that case which didn't happen in the others, and it should have done. There should be an investigation of what went wrong in every single case where this happens, at the very least, and I would argue in others as well, because you have other cases where there's no doubt about innocence because the science proves no crime happened. Well, if no crime happened, you have to be innocent by definition.
Surely then there's a case for malicious prosecution?
Yes.
Well, spotted, shorty.
I don't think that there is any doubt about it. But you see, what happened with this is that, again, the police decided to investigate and they made a tactical mistake in that they had Wynne Phillips saying that when Gafoor pleaded guilty, it was all about Lynette. And yes, it was important. Lynette was the primary focus and needs to remain the primary focus. But let us not forget there were other victims here. What they managed to do is essentially say there are 2 classes of victims by not actually apologising. I mean, how ridiculous can you get? When Tony Paris demands an apology on the steps of the court, give it to him. He's earned it. He deserves it. They all deserve it. And you actually would come out looking far better than what actually happened, which is you apologised anyway 3 days later and you were seen as if you were forced to apologise. They were actually going to apologise all along. But they then start this process of investigating what went wrong. And they did a pretty good job of it. The biggest problems with this was once again the CPS, because what they've managed to do is they prosecuted the only people who have been successfully prosecuted over this outrageous miscarriage of justice are people who were bullied for months until they told a pack of lies which the investigators wanted them to tell. But and now they've been prosecuted for telling these lies.
Right, so that we're talking now about Yusuf Abdullahi.
No, we're not.
Who are we talking about? So we're talking about the witnesses.
Yes.
The witnesses that were all dubious.
They were vulnerable.
Yeah.
They were vulnerable people, yes, because a couple of them were saying that they were being bullied by the police, weren't they?
No, they weren't saying it. It was accepted in the court. In 2008, they were tried with committing on perjury. But what happened with this is that their defence was duress, i.e. we were made to do it, we didn't have a choice. What the CPS did is they charged them with their evidence at the committal hearing, and at the two trials. They carefully did not charge them with perjury in their statements, the crucial statements in November and December of 1988. And the reason they didn't is everyone and their dog knew that that was under duress. And as soon as you prosecute them for duress, they win the argument on duress over the statements. Then you would argue, well, this is the fruit of the poisonous tree, which it plainly was. Because if they hadn't given those statements or been forced under duress to give these statements against the Cardiff Five, the evidence that results in the charging of the Cardiff Five doesn't happen, and they don't go to court to give evidence, perjured evidence, so the whole process that follows doesn't happen. It began with the fruit of this poisonous tree, and as such, the duress law should have allowed it, and they should have been able to say that even if you don't charge us with this, the question is, why not? Why have you not? You know, according to your case, we made these statements, we lied. That is, there is a perjury warning at the top of these statements. So they know full well that they have perjured themselves in these statements. If you're going to charge them for evidence that came out of this, then you have to charge them with this.
Okay, but I was always under the impression that Stephen Pineapple Miller had confessed under duress during his interrogation by the police.
He did.
Yes, so, you know, with the evidence being perjured by the ladies and the gentlemen who we referred to, I don't think we've named them, they're still alive, but
We can name them.
It's Mrs. Vilday, yeah. And Hewins, is it?
No.
Angela Pasila.
Angela Pasila, Mark Gromick, and yes. Leanne Vilday.
Those are the
and
three
they
witnesses.
They are now, or should be seen, as the new Cardiff Three, because they are victims of an injustice. There's no two ways about it.
Yeah, but so the police were pressured. Are you telling me that the police pressured those three people to give in this false evidence that meant in the end that the Cardiff Five was arrested and put on trial?
It was a large part of it.
Yeah. It's all very, very sad, Satish, that these things go on. What can you do about it now, nowadays? And are there any more examples of a similar thing which didn't include black people? Is it all just white people who are getting off now? Samantha's shaking her head. She's saying, mother. I'm just trying to clear it up.
You can be a victim of a miscarriage of justice simply for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. It happens proportionately more to non-white people, but you are not immune if you are white. And it's what you need to look at here is the actual whole functioning of the criminal justice system. It doesn't look at you particularly in terms of black and white. It looks at you in terms of whether it can secure convictions and how it can secure convictions. And this, again, it all comes back to the CPS, because they made the decision to prosecute these witnesses. Why? The whole process... Sorry, you want to say something?
Yeah, in that case, if it's not just the South Wales Police who were prosecuted, but the trial collapsed, why weren't the CPS also arrested? Why is it just stopping there? Why are they above the justice system?
The CPS have Crown immunity.
Right.
And because of that, it is very, very difficult to bring an investigation and prosecute them. Part of the problem is how fundamentally unaccountable the Crown Prosecution Service has been. It was set up over 25 years ago to provide independence, operational independence from the police in decisions on whether to prosecute or not. There have been cases where the police basically take all the blows. The CPS somehow seem to be insulated from the level of criticism that they deserve. To give you another example of one of the vindication cases in South Wales, the Skipper case, Karen Skipper. Philip Skipper was accused of murdering her. He was tried for this and he was acquitted. The evidence was absolutely pathetic against him. The man was innocent. The police didn't think there was enough evidence. It was a CPS decision to prosecute. And yet, the miscarriage of justice, and it led to a further one because they gifted the person subsequently arrested when they identified the alien DNA, foreign DNA that was found in this particular case, they gifted a defence to that person. That person effectively prosecuted the late Philip Skipper again for this crime. He did it at his first trial, he did it at his appeal, and he did it at a retrial, and he tried again at the at an appeal. This is outrageous. Philip Skipper has family, and both are also Karen Skipper too. They were completely and utterly betrayed, but let's be frank about it. It was not South Wales Police who betrayed them. It was the CPS again. And these cases, what happened in the Lynette White case is they take over this, and now the reason I would say the prosecution was appalling, and I mean completely and utterly appalling, actually that is a compliment, it wasn't even that good. What they did in this case is that if you notice on police cases where they are trying to prosecute police crime, you have to believe that miscarriage of justice case, you have to believe that the people originally accused were innocent. You have to prove it. And this doesn't happen. What you had in this case is clear, unequivocal proof of it. But this prosecution, it's so lackluster and so pathetic that they did not call a witness who could prove that South Wales Police and the CPS knew in 1989 that the so-called cocktail theory, the so-called explanation of the forensic science evidence in this case was, and I quote Professor David Barclay, scientifically ludicrous. He says it is absolutely clear that the prosecution scenario was scientifically ludicrous because what they expect you to believe, and it has to be the case on their original case scenario that they take to court, is that there are five men committing this murder in that flat. There are up to four witnesses there seeing it. In pitch black, they have gone through and out of that flat without leaving so much as one single or even partial blood-stained footprint. It is impossible.
Ludicrous. It's absolutely ludicrous.
As you walk along, you're dropping skin cells, epithelials all over the place. You can't walk into a room without leaving a bit of evidence that you've been there. All right,
I just need to say something else on this.
Go ahead.
It isn't a case of that they didn't drop the DNA or leave their DNA at the crime scene. There was the DNA of the one killer at the crime scene, and it was all over the place. There is no doubt that this case should have been investigated properly, and it should have stopped in 1989. They should have said, and to be fair to them, it was impossible to solve this in 1989, and that is because of the characteristics of Jeffrey Gafoor, which we'll come back to later. But the key point on all of this is that the CPS doesn't have an excuse. In 1989, it should not have prosecuted this case. When it comes to the so-called police corruption trial, they should have prosecuted it efficiently. They didn't. If you had called Professor Barclay, you would have knocked out the defence of trying to blame the Cardiff Five before it even started. Yeah. And that is what should have happened. And for the CPS and the prosecution team not to do that is reprehensible.
Go back to Gafoor now then. Tell me why was he so obviously the person, and why is he such a dangerous man still today, even though he's banged up?
He's obviously the person because of the DNA trail. Don't forget with this, in 1988, 1989, there were some samples where you had a combination of blood groups, which were rare, and it didn't match any of the original people. Well, it did match him. They then eventually do the DNA test. So they get the DNA profile from these samples. They get further DNA samples from various other things that they had retained. And there was the reconstruction of the exit route. The exit route reconstruction is the key thing because you cannot plant this. It had been painted over. It was absolutely impossible. It had been there for the best part of 15 years, unknown to anybody. So it's absolutely plain that that blood that was under that paint was that of the killer, because it matched the other samples as well, and it matched him. He, in the end, pleaded guilty because there was nowhere to hide on this. You couldn't refute this. It's one of the few times where I wouldn't say you should have uncorroborated DNA case, and I wouldn't say this is an uncorroborated DNA evidence. It's corroborated by the fact that it is impossible to plant it because of the painting over of the crime scene. The reason Gafoor, in my eyes, is such a dangerous killer isn't that he has done this all over the place. It's actually the opposite. He hasn't. What you had normal things with this is you would get a offender profiling or behavioral profiling, as they call it now, and you would get from that you predict the likely psychological characteristics of the killer. Normally it would be that they had built up over a long period of time with offences of violence, of starting with against children and against animals, and building up until you finally reach this stage. There's none of that with Gafoor. There's one incident in 1992, I believe, where he attacks a work colleague with half a brick, and that's it. He gets community service for that. But so what you have here is very unusual in that, one, there's no build-up, but after there's no build-up, there's no continuation as well. And this is impossible to predict. How do you actually deal with this? What use is offender profiling if you cannot predict this? Because what you really wanted to know isn't the level of insight that was provided, which is that the killer was likely to be a client of Lynette. Well, I'd expect that from a 10-year-old, no offence, but you know, that is essentially how bad it was. This is no insight at all. What you actually wanted to know here was the characteristics of Gafoor, because that is actually what would lead you towards him. These profiles don't.
Okay. Yes, but not all murderers are serial killers and will follow certain mm-hmm. set patterns of criminal behaviour. I'd mm-hmm. like to get on to the reasons why the police corruption case trial failed. What happened there, Satish?
Right, well, first of all, I wasn't able to attend that trial because I was due to be a witness in this case.
Why would you, as an author and as a journalist, why would you be a witness in this case?
It stemmed from they had found I had some material, because as a journalist there were things I could do that the police couldn't do, and that people would talk to me who would not talk to the police. In one of these things, I met and talked to Courtney Malcolm Davis, who is now deceased. He was murdered, and he had provided a tape of what had happened to him in the Lynette White inquiry. He was alleging that the South Wales Police, in particular one of the officers, had facilitated, involving the armed robber and prison informer, to what amounted to a conspiracy to pervert the course of justice. I had this tape, and I knew how it came about. Courtney Malcolm Davis could not give this evidence anymore, as he was deceased, so they needed me, and I was due to give this evidence. What we recognised, because I was at the time, we were highlighting this in the Fitted In journal mainly, and I was commissioned to cover this. So we both said, that's the editor of the Fitted In journal and myself, said to the CPS, we recognise, as I'm due to give evidence, that I can't attend the trial until I give evidence. So call me early so we all can have what we want, which is they can, everyone can get the evidence. They can cross-examine if they want to. And I would be able to attend the rest of the trial and get a view of what was going on. And it just happens to be, well, I ask people, do they actually believe that it is coincidence that the one person who actually would have known what was going on, would have been able to see the prosecution and the flaws in the prosecution, was kept out of this trial, and that it was coincidence that they choose to have the part that I'm due to give evidence on right at the very end of the trial? They claim they can't take me early because the jury wouldn't understand. Well, let's be frank here. The only idiots in this case are the Crown Prosecution Service. It wasn't the jury. There is no reason why the jury could not have understood the evidence that I give and that I had to give and kept it in the for when they needed to use it. To essentially say this jury could not have understood that is frankly demeaning, and it is insulting, and it had the effect of deliberately keeping me out of the trial. What happened with this is, while the CPS did not do what it should have done to protect the integrity of this trial process, I did. I actually went halfway around the world to avoid being prejudiced by anything that I could hear. I didn't follow the evidence, I didn't follow the case at all. I avoided it studiously in order to ensure that any evidence I give would be unprejudiced by anything that I had seen. Eventually, they decide to call me to give evidence, and I had told them I specifically cannot give evidence on a couple of particular days. So they decide those have to be the days that I'm due to be called. And I said, I've had enough of this nonsense. I told you in advance I couldn't do that. And you know, I'll tell you what, if you want me to give evidence on that day, that's fine, I will. As long as you pay my flight to Russia to interview Obafemi Martins. They didn't like that too much. So they then went and changed the date. And eventually they say, we're sorry, we don't need you anymore. So I say, why not? And they say, we've established this evidence already. Well, unless mediums are now accepted in courts of law, I don't see how that could have happened. Because the only people who knew about the evidence that I was due to give are myself, the reason that I was needed in the first place, and the late Courtney Malcolm Davis. So it is absolutely plain that this was deliberate to keep me out. Eventually, I sort of said to them, I've had enough, like, I want the full transcripts of this trial. And they refused. I said, look, I'm not giving you a choice here. I want those transcripts. Deliver them, because you made sure I couldn't cover this. I now have the transcripts. So that's why I know a large part of what went on and how I could piece it together, that they did not call the one person they should have called, and they knew about this because they have prosecuted, well, I use the term very, very loosely, police crime previously, and they have made exactly the same mistake. So the problem with all of this is that you have to make a choice sometimes. Like, you have to decide, do you want to prosecute, do you want revenge on the people who perpetrated the miscarriage of justice, or do you want to find out why and how this happened and make sure it never happened again? And I was in the latter camp, which of course nobody realised because I never got the chance to say. And they made sure that I didn't, because actually I don't hold the police as accountable and as responsible. Certainly they are responsible. They did things which are unacceptable, and they caused and participated in one of the worst miscarriages of justice in British history, but they should have been stopped, and they could have been stopped. And the people who are responsible for failing to stop that are the ones that are largely responsible, and they were the ones who wanted a process that didn't actually deliver.
And that's the Crown Prosecution Services.
What you have now is I had made a complaint at various points in time in relation to the CPS. This is like, I asked them, why did you prosecute the Cardiff Five? And I started this in 1992, immediately after the release of the Cardiff Three. And they sort of prevaricated. After quite a long time, I kept asking them, why did you prosecute the Cardiff Three? At various points in time, or Cardiff 5, at various points in time, they eventually came back and they said, well, we secured convictions. So I said, and I looked at this and said, so let me get this straight. You are somehow claiming that it is a recommendation to have secured one of the worst miscarriages of justice in British history. This has become a recommendation now. They went quiet with that one. Then they, so I said, right, I want a proper answer. Why did you prosecute the Cardiff Five when your own code for Crown prosecutors clearly is showing they should never have been prosecuted? Then they say it was a decision of Howell Hughes, the Crown prosecutor who no longer works for the organisation. So that makes it okay now. He doesn't work for the organisation. Well, that is absolutely brilliant. Except the common practice within the CPS in South Wales was to discuss these cases, and I'm sure elsewhere. So they would have talked, even though it was his final decision, they would have talked on it, and the organisation bears institutional responsibility for the decisions made. They are responsible. You cannot simply say this person didn't do his job properly, and even if you do try and say that, what was the sanction against Howell Hughes for doing it? Well, the answer to that, absolutely nothing. The CPS has never taken responsibility. They are so outrageous in and brazen in their conduct, they haven't even had the common decency to apologise to all of the victims of this case and to the public that they are supposed to serve. Now, if I could sort of carry on with this for a minute, there is an important point to this, which is we have a situation where there has been an investigation which went horribly wrong in 1988, which cost a certain amount. There were two trials which cost a certain amount in up to 1990. There was the appeals, there was the cost of keeping the wrong people in prison for a very long time. There was forcing the reopening of the case in 1995, an investigation which lasted 4 years. It was eventually stopped, and then it was immediately started again by them reopening the case a second time. So there is the phase two investigation, which takes 4 and a bit years to find the real perpetrator. Then you have phase three, which takes 9 years. Then you have the IPCC investigation to explain what had gone wrong in the original, in the police corruption trial, as it's called. And you have HMCPSI, and we still don't know why they actually prosecuted them, or because the CPS thinks it doesn't have to be accountable. Why is it that we as a society are essentially saying we do not mind you wasting £50 to £100 million of taxpayers' money on this one case, and we still don't have answers?
£100 million. It's amazing.
If you added it up, it
yes,
would come to something
absolutely,
like that.
You're absolutely right. And then there's all the other people who've been damaged and injured mm-hmm. because of this. The relatives of Lynette. Her mother must yes. be awfully upset every year this comes back. Is she? Oh, sadly, she passed on. But I do apologise that I'm not up to all the information, up to date with everything. But there's all the families of the Cardiff Five, the Acty family, the Paris family. There's been lots of horrible...
The whole of Bute Town was affected by this.
Labelled, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yes, and also, you know, it's just been going on for so many years, mm-hmm. and it needs to be brought to some sort of resolution where if not necessarily a prosecution, but just an admission and a sorry, and we're going to learn from our mistakes and we're going to make some changes. Otherwise, it's all just left hanging in the air, and it's a very bad smell.
And to add to this as well, when the HMCPSI investigation of what went wrong said that they had not, the disclosure obligations weren't properly dealt with. They didn't provide an experienced disclosure officer. What the CPS did was provide a junior who now goes around saying that he is provides expert advice on, among other things, disclosure issues. And they've basically made a complete and utter mess. Why? Why did you not provide an experienced disclosure officer to make sure that what happened didn't happen? Because don't forget, this trial collapsed. Largely, I mean, there was a lot of disclosure problems, but the main thing were four files. Three of them were allegedly ordered to be destroyed by James Haskell, the barrister who was the disclosure officer. The other allegedly on the head of the inquiry, Chris Coutts. Now, Coutts has been taking a lot of flack for this, and he doesn't deserve it. because he is the one who actually found these supposedly missing documents, which were the cause of the collapse of the trial. Yes, it happens a month.
Weeks later.
And they are found in his office in the incident room, in the very box that they had been sent by to the police by the IPCC. Well, it plainly wasn't looked for properly, and it wasn't looked for properly because they didn't have the time. And once again, with this, the CPS should have demanded the time. There is absolutely no reason why that trial could not have been dealt with in the following manner. And the following manner is this. What should have happened is, if the disclosure wasn't fit for purpose, then you stop the trial. You say, CPS, you have 4 months to get your act together to make sure everything that should be disclosed to these defendants, and they have a right to a fair trial as everybody else does, should be disclosed to them, and then you start again. And then there is the other matter, which they very, very conveniently forget, which is that the trials were severed. There were another few defendants of police officers due to face trial afterward. How was the non-disclosure that happened in the first trial prejudicing the second trial, which didn't even happen?
Yeah, well, we've got to take another short break there, Satish, but we'll be back for more chat after this short break.